but I passed the breath test. This is McDaniel Reynolds with the Reynolds Defense Firm, and we specialize in one thing. We represent good people facing DUI charges. While you know that it's illegal to drive with a .08 or greater blood alcohol content, not everyone knows that you could be arrested in Oregon for an alcohol DUI even if you blow well under a .08. This is a pretty loose standard, and it's a way that many of the good people we represent find themselves needing our help when they thought they were doing everything right. The Reynolds Defense Firm. We're solid, we're here if you need us, and we are very good at what we do.
BFFT. From the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
Big announcement, Gonzaga and Oregon are going to play each other in men's basketball. December 21st, Moda Center, it is on. This is a long overdue matchup, and I got to be honest, when I heard about it, my mind went to one person. Our next guest, Pat Kilkenny, former University of Oregon athletic director and donor, booster. I mean, this game, Pat, is like the Kilkenny baby. I mean, this is your thing, Gonzaga and Oregon.
Yeah, well, I mean, everybody gets too much credit and too much blame when, you know, in life, and this is an example where I would get way too much credit, but it's something that needed to happen. And because of, you know, macroeconomics and college athletics, you know, becoming professional sports as we speak, you know, this opportunity was too significant for, you know, either program to walk by. So, you know, it did happen.
All right.
It is going to happen.
These games that get put on, I have often wondered why the schools themselves don't play sort of the promoter role. And it looks to me in this one that the schools are going to get a bigger piece of the financial pie because you're not involving a big promoter. Can you help us understand kind of the background on all of that?
Well, yeah, typically, you know, the games that are, you know, part of their season ticket package are covered by, you know, the secondary and tertiary media, you know, providers. Everything is already preordained, and there's not a lot of economic upside that, you know, that can be, you know, in this case, sent to the program so they can use it to help elevate, you know, Gonzaga basketball and Oregon basketball. And so doing a neutral site, you know, with even though Diamond Ducks is an organization that's doing the spade work on it, they're not a not-for-profit, but they are not profiting on this at all other than whatever their expenses are and all the economic upside. You know, if they sell the buildings out, or, you know, it's going to be hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars for both programs. So, and if you had a promoter involved, you know, it would be a pre-agreed amount of money that would be paid to the programs, and the promoter would, you know, make a significant amount of money. So this is I think it made great sense because it's all about Gonzaga basketball and Oregon basketball, you know, playing a competition that's long overdue, but also being able to generate the economic resources they need to, you know, be competitive in today's climate.
You know Mark Few well at Gonzaga. You know Dana Altman. You hired the guy at Oregon. This game feels like it was overdue. In your mind, what does that feel like for you to see these two schools sign on?
Well, I mean, it's too bad somebody's got to lose. I mean, there may be a question about who I'm rooting for, but you know, I've known Mark since 1991, and for him to lose a game to Oregon is not going to change his life much. But it's great for college basketball. They're the two most iconic programs on the West Coast. I, you know, probably have to include Arizona in the mix. But if you look at the metrics, you know, Oregon, Gonzaga, Arizona, I mean, UCLA recently, and, you know, and they're, what is that, 7 miles by, or 7 hours by bus apart, and have not played. Gonzaga reported they played in 99. I'm positive they didn't play in 99. And they said and Oregon said they played in 83. And then there was the game in the Bahamas. So, but it should be a great game for college basketball. It should be incredibly competitive. You know, I'm really excited to sit in the Moda Center, and hopefully it'll sell out.
I know we've talked about this over the years, but you were the athletic director at Oregon. You hired Dana Altman. Can you just briefly tell us what you saw in Dana that made you pull the trigger on that?
Well, you know, for me to hire coaches was a stretch because I was in the insurance business, but I've always been great at, listening to people that are experienced and informed. And, you know, and I spoke to a lot of people during my 39-day ordeal, which I put Oregon basketball back for a solid year because it took me so darn long. But I never heard anything other than incredibly positive things about him as a basketball coach in game, just all the kinds of things that you'll hear from the professionals in the business. And then when you spend, and I'd met him once before, coincidentally, but and had a dinner with him, but he's such a great fit for, you know, Eugene, Oregon, high character, just someone that would never, ever embarrass the school and would, you know, you'd be proud to have him on your sideline. So, but probably the one detail that one metric that I was able to, and I don't remember exactly what the metric was because it was, 15 years ago, but it was close games. And they say that close games are dictated by good coaching down the stretch. And his numbers were, you know, like 75% of the games were just settled by 5 points or less. He won them. So, and it was funny because Phil Knight's an accountant and by education experience. And he asked me the same question. He said, "Why are you so excited about this guy?" And I gave him a fairly long answer, but I said, but at the end, I really like the fact that he won a lot of close games, and maybe that's a nit, but to me, it seemed like it was really important. And as we've watched him over the years, you know, he has the right lineups out there, the right guy at the foul line. And I couldn't be, you know, prouder of how he's represented the university either.
Funny how those hires work out because, you know, I think as it goes that in that 39 days, you were flying all over the country. You were swinging big. You were taking big swings, which I like. You know, I don't begrudge you for that. But what did that feel like to you? You know, you're meeting with Tom Izzo and I think Jamie Dixon and some others. But what did that feel like to you in that 39 days?
Well, it was frustrating because I knew we were going to miss a recruiting cycle, and I felt that was on me. But we were building a, you know, $200 million building, and we couldn't settle. We needed to get it right. And the building's named after Phil's kid, Finn Penny's kid, and it was just, you know, I didn't sign up for that. I signed up to go build a building and then hopefully to go home. And then a lot of things happened. And, you know, but I felt great because there's guys that, you know, Steve Fisher and Bill Frieder and Judd Heathcote and these, you know, icons of the business that, you know, Don Munson that gave me, you know, their perspective about, you know, the right person to look for Eugene, Oregon to compete in the conference. And so I got a lot of great information along the way. So a guy by the name of Eric Lautenbach at Nike, I wore him out. I talked to him daily. So I had a lot of help, John. But it still took me 39 days. I mean, had I not had all that help, we probably wouldn't have a basketball coach yet. So.
Pat Kilkenny with us, former Oregon athletic director. You mentioned earlier an entity, the Diamond Ducks. Oregon baseball, you brought it back. It traditionally, baseball has been, 11.7 scholarships, now trying to fund 34 scholarships. Under the new rules and really don't have the resources inside the athletic department to do it. So tell us how Diamond Ducks pops up.
Well, we have a fabulous baseball coach. And in fact, he reminds me a lot of Dana Altman. He's a, you know, to his core. And he, in the first, I guess, 4 years were in postseason, a couple of, second weekends in, you know, in the tournament, had a real shot at going to the Omaha, and he, you know, was really frustrated because he could see in front of him that, you know, the baseball programs like Oregon State and, you know, that were really dedicated to it, were going to out-resource him. And he asked for help. And I said, you know, the problem is everybody's worn out about signing checks, but let's see if we can organize a kind of quasi for-profit organization with some entrepreneurial people that are ducks that, you know, that want to figure out how to commercialize our baseball program. And so we sent out a handful of notes and made some phone calls and I got Renee Baumgartner involved and Joe Gensante, who helped bring the program back. Both of them did. And we found a core group of people that were willing to, you know, not only, you know, digging their jeans a bit, but more importantly, you know, give us their time and energy and help us build a path forward to help, you know, generate the kind of resources we need in order to fill that, to start with that scholarship gap, which was, had to happen. We don't have tuition waivers in Oregon, which is shame on Oregon. They should have tuition waivers. And so we have to actually pay out-of-state tuition on top of, you know, filling the gap from, say, 11.7 to, you know, to a number that will allow Woz and his extraordinary staff to be competitive. And that got put together. We hired Joe Gensante to be a full-time resource, and we actually brought another young guy in, Tanner Smith, who's got some records at Oregon baseball that helped, you know, full-time. And they're off to the races. They've done, are doing a fabulous job of doing some very creative things. And I think we probably doubled the scholarships for this next year already, you know, which will allow us to field a baseball team and, you know, and maybe some other creative methods of helping, you know, fund it, you know, according to whatever the new rules are.
And I think it's interesting because people think about Oregon and they think, well, they've got endless resources and, you know, that $20.5 million in revenue sharing, often earmarked for football and men's basketball. That's just where the revenue is. That's where the money goes. And so I do worry about the other sports, particularly a sport that you helped bring back, and the concern, and there's obviously some hand-wringing. How much can you lean on former Ducks who are now in the big leagues? How much do you need, like, Joe McGee, who's sitting at the park watching a game?
You know, we're just, you know, scratching the surface on that because some of these kids are, you know, are just developing, you know, Tyler Anderson and kids like that, that, you know, David Peterson, that have had some success, been in the All-Star game. How about that? But, you know, we got young families and, you know, giving is something that takes a while. I mean, I used to have conversations with some 50-year-olds when I was at Oregon that had a lot of money that were ex-athletes and pretty much blew me off. So it's hard. they think they've already given. But I can tell you that Tanner Smith and Joe Gensante every day are talking to these, you know, people that are passionate Ducks, and a lot of them, you know, have made some money in the business and or making money doing other things. So, you know, and I will tell you this, and I don't know, you know, this 100%, but this Oregon baseball has been funded almost exclusively without Phil and Penny's, you know, investment. And I say that respectfully because it's like, can we do something without, you know, their help? And so there's a lot of pride in all the people that have, you know, and it takes a village. And there's a long list of people that have given tens of thousands and several that have given hundreds of thousands of dollars for Oregon baseball. And, you know, and we're competing. And this, you know, Mark Wasikowski is a special dude. I mean, George Horton got us to the party and, you know, and Mark is, Woz is building on it. So, and he's got a great staff also.
DiamondDucksBB.com for people interested in checking out what's going on with the Diamond Ducks. You're watching college athletics change. What are your thoughts on where it is now and where it's headed? I mean, you've run successful businesses. You've been around college athletics. You've worked on the inside. You've got unique perspective.
Well, I mean, it's just unfolding in front of our eyes. And the NCAA has just done a horrible job of getting out in front of anything. And they're not doing a very good job here either. And it's just really disappointing because that's a governing body. And so, you know, what's going to happen with this $21 million is, so then there's going to be, you know, like DeAndre Ayton didn't get money back in the day when you couldn't get money. So it's going to start happening again where they're going to start, you know, feeding on the fringes and doing things that, you know, that they aren't supposed to be doing. And I just don't know how, you know, that it's starting to lose its charm, John, you know, to me. Yep. So, you know, and that's just disappointing to me. It was funny. I spent some time coincidentally with Mark Few last week. His daughter's coming to school at USD. And I asked Mark, I said, how is it, you know, with your team? And he said, you know, when they hit the court, he said, it's the same. These kids are getting money, but he said, they're still playing their butts off and they're very competitive. And so that part was encouraging to me. And I think Lanning would probably tell you the same thing. I'm pretty sure Dana will tell you the same thing. So part of it is, you know, the kids haven't lost interest. You see some of them, there's a little entitlement attached to it, but so that part of it, I think, you know, when you watch what happened in some of those games this weekend with the, you know, with these highly ranked and invested in programs, and, you know, looked like the kids were playing their butts off. So that part of it, I guess, is still okay. But I wish we would have got out in front of it, you know, 15 years ago, I'm giving the kids $10,000 a year or whatever it is that we needed to give them in order to, so they have a, you know, enough money to go home and see their sick grandmother, or go home in the summer. You know, that was a part, that was a big miss by the NCAA.
Do you think more or less corruption in this model than maybe, you know, when the bags were getting handed off in the SEC back in the day?
That's a really good question. It just seems like schools like Oregon that have never given kids money are now going to be comfortable doing it. So
yeah,
it's probably going to be more pervasive. I would like to think Oregon will, you know, play within the, you know, the boundaries, whatever those are by definition. It's going to be a challenge, but the competitive parity is hugely problematic. I can tell you the top 12 teams at the end of the year in football right now, I just can't tell you what order they'll finish in because they just are so out-resourced. And, you know, Gundy's right. There's, you know, the schools that don't have, you know, phenomenal resources are going to have a hard time. And, but, you know, but also, you know, T. Boone Pickens and people like that were at Oklahoma State. So, it's just, I don't know where those lines should be drawn, John. And, you know, it's just, it's all changed, right? Bottom line.
Pat Kilkenny, I appreciate you. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks. I appreciate your good work too, John. I love your human interest stories. Keep doing those.
Thanks, Pat. Good stuff. Pat Kilkenny, former University of Oregon athletic director, now involved in promoting a basketball game, Oregon and Gonzaga, in December. I've long believed that that match should have been made. Those schools should be playing each other. I don't know if it's Gonzaga. I don't know if it was Oregon. But those two sides could not get together forever, and now they are. What other games and what other rivalries or what other series would you like to see played on a regular basis? I mean, beyond the obvious, the rivalry games that you have that are sort of your in-state rivalries. It just makes sense to me, like, Gonzaga should be playing Oregon in basketball all the time. Hell, I think there should be some kind of preseason four-team tournament stolen from the idea of the Far West Classic, and put Oregon State in Oregon, put Gonzaga, put Washington State. Let's bring St. Mary's in. Let's get all the best basketball schools. How about San Diego State? Get all the best basketball schools in the western part of the United States and let them duke it out. I mean, Pat Kilkenny brings up that great idea of, like, who are the legacy basketball schools in that region of the country. And you certainly think about Arizona and you think about UCLA. USC has had its moments, but I'd love to see that. Like all the western basketball schools that are good. Hell, put Grand Canyon in there and let's hold that Far West Classic at Moda Center. And oh, by the way, don't let the promoters keep all the money. Let the schools get the money and use it for NIL, and not just Oregon and Gonzaga, who are obviously playing this game for a couple of reasons. Like, they're playing this game because, it first and foremost, they're going to raise some money out of it. They're playing this game because it's a good opponent. So why not get all of the best teams, have the top teams play each other, second-tier teams play each other? I would definitely put Oregon and Gonzaga and San Diego State in this thing. I would put Arizona in this thing. I would put UCLA in this thing. I would put the potential, like, to even bring in a Utah State if they are good in a given year in this thing. If Oregon State wants to be part of it, Wayne Tinkle's got to get it together, and they need to play at a higher level, or you have a second tier and you sort of have the A division and the B division as you did back in the day. Of course, there are some restrictions that, you know, you can't have, conference games and stuff like that are played, and there are limits on preseason. But I'm just dreaming here. I'm just spitballing and dreaming. What would we do from a football standpoint? Schools that play each other. I mean, aside from wanting to see kind of the legacy Pac-12 schools play each other, like, it was cool to see Utah suited up against UCLA last week in week one. I mean, I'm sure Deshaun Foster didn't appreciate that maybe as much as Kyle Whittingham, but it was nice to kind of see, like, hey, that game that we came to see in the Pac-12 over all those years is still getting played, or at least Mark Harlan, the AD at Utah, who formerly was at UCLA, is interested in playing that game and scheduling that game. Let fans have a voice in the scheduling. Can you imagine what college football week one would have looked like if fans had a voice in the scheduling? Can you imagine what the basketball non-conference schedule would look like if fans got to say, hey, these are the matchups that we want to see? There are a lot of sports, boxing among them, MMA, UFC among them. There are a lot of sports that sort of have that voice. It's not implicit, but that voice is in there because the fans are driving viewership. They're driving what used to be pay-per-view in boxing and pay-per-view back in the day on UFC. And so, you know, college football, maybe when this with this ESPN direct-to-consumer offering that's coming out, maybe there's a pay-per-view element with college football, and college football fans will line up to see the best games and the best matchups played. You know, I communicated a little bit today with one of the involved parties on that BYU-Oregon State game that's going to take place in 2028. That's a big deal. BYU, Oregon State, that, you know, that's going to be a big deal to see those two teams play in what will be a, you know, a pretty good early season game in 2028. But Oregon State better be ready for it. Oregon State has been actively pursuing a neutral site game against a Power 5 opponent, and ESPN wanted to underwrite it. Significant step. Scott Barnes said it's a significant step in advancing the brand at Oregon State. Fans love to travel to Vegas. It works out financially. All of that part of Oregon State's 2028 non-conference schedule. All right, I want you to leave it here. We got Punch It Audio still ahead. John Wilner in the 5 o'clock hour. Whole bunch more here in the Bald-Faced Truth.